Hi everyone, welcome to day two of the Synergy Traders Derivatives 2023 conference, futures and options trading. So we get another 10 great presentations for you today. And the Synergy Trader series is brought to you by tradeoutloud.com and timingresearch.com. And of course, all of the presentations are for educational purposes only. Trading is not suitable for all people. Please consult a financial advisor and only trade with money you can afford to lose. And of course, all sessions are being recorded individually. You'll be able to find the recordings on timingresearch.com. Also, if you search for Timing Research on YouTube, Substack, or your favorite podcast app, you can find the recordings there as well. And so today, I arranged for Michael Filiera to be our opening presenter, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Thank you, David. And good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on where you may be sitting in our world. My name is Michael Filiera, and I am the owner, proprietor of LogicalSignals.com and also TradersHelpingTraders.com. And a little bit about my background. I began in the markets in 1979 as a market maker on the Pacific Exchange here in San Francisco. I started trading options and then as a market maker on the floor. And I've also traded on the London traded options market in London, on the European Options Exchange in Amsterdam, and on the DTB in Germany before returning back to the United States, returning to the Pacific Exchange. In about 2001, the markets began to really go pretty much electronic and the floors became sort of obsolete, when trading was shifting from floor trading to electronic trading. And at that time, I made a decision to leave the floor, and I went and set myself up in my home office and continued to trade. I went through a period where I didn't trade, and then when I decided to come back and trade again, I thought about options, but then I switched and decided that I really didn't like the volatility, the overnight volatility in the markets at the time, and I chose to become a day trader. And that was in 2013 when I decided to do it exclusively. And I began to trade the futures market. And at that time, I was trading the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, and crude oil, along with gold. And I've kind of hung out and stuck with that. The whole process of being a day trader suits me much, much better. And what I mean by that is you can go in each day without having to battle a position, without having to make adjustments to a position, without having to worry about a position, and just trade the price action and what's directly in front of you. So it has become a very steady process for me. Now, what has started to happen recently is what I want to talk about today. So the title of my presentation today is that are derivatives the new underlying? So, and what I mean by that, if you have any options experience, options on equities, on an index, on a commodity, have always been considered the derivative, with the underlying being actually that physical index or a stock or a commodity. So for example, if you were trading options in Apple, it settles into shares of Apple. So that becomes the underlying. Now, this big change that I've started to see is why I titled it, are derivatives becoming the new underlying? Because it seems that options trading is not necessarily being, it's not the derivative. The options seem to be in control of what that price action is going to happen in the underlying. And so I want to kind of show those examples today, and I want to kind of show what was behind or is behind, in my view, that particular change between options being a derivative to being the underlying. So I just kind of want to begin by, excuse me on my voice, I want to begin just by talking about options themselves. So again, not relying on anybody's particular experience in options trading or just in options themselves. There are two basic puts. There's calls and there's puts. Calls give the holder the right to purchase the underlying at a particular price. And I'm just going to zip right over and go to Well, we'll go to the one that's active today. But I'm actually going to go to the SPX because that's kind of the big daddy when it comes to options. And we just got to wait, and there's our data. We'll go to today. So here we have all what we call strike prices. And to tell you the truth, what I could do if I go to all, you can see the strike prices over all of our months starts at 1,200. Well, the S&P 500 is trading at 4,561. So that's quite a bit of strike prices. And they really jump pretty big until we get above 3,000. Then they start to go into order. So I don't like to show that many because it's kind of crazy to have that many. But here I have just volume and open interest, but we can also now start to look at what all these different numbers mean. And I'm going to come down into where we are considering, let me close. We're considering what would be at the money, et cetera, et cetera. So going back to the basics, call option gives the holder the right to purchase 100 shares of the S&P future or one future at, let's take the at the money's for 4565 or actually 4560. So you're getting, if you're purchasing this call, you have the right to purchase or the index at 4560. And for that right today, you would be paying, I'm going to round it up, $14. So in essence, you're paying, because we got to add those together, you'd be paying the dealer, the person selling it to you, $45.74, because you take that price and you add it to that. Now, that's what that price, how that works out. Now, the put, which is this side, that gives the holder the right to sell the index to whoever sells them that. If you're the buyer of the put, you have the right to sell this index at $45.65. And for that right, you're going to be paying $16. So same thing in reverse. In essence, you are actually buying the right to sell the index $16 lower than $45.65. Now, you likely have also heard others when they're talking, they say a put's a call and call and a call is a put. And that's because combined, these two prices will work out to be this price. So that's really where that saying comes in. Now, we have different measurements that come in when you buy an option. So it's really behooves, if you're going to start trading options, that you understand what each one of these symbols, and they're all Greek letters, delta, gamma, theta, and vega, and what they mean. So what we're really kind of looking at is going over and taking a peek. So just quickly breaking it down. The delta is a measurement that talks about the change in the price of the underlying. So if the S&P goes up a dollar, then what happens, what we're looking at here, how much will this option go up? And accordingly, it's telling me it'll go up 51 cents. And that is a product of where the volatility is at the moment, because it's considered in the money, but it's not considered a deep in the money. So it still has volatility, even though it expires today. So you can see that we have to go all the way down to 44.90 before we get 100 delta. So what 100 delta means is like a $1 move in the stock or the underlying produces a $1 move in that option. So here we are sitting at the money option, which is 45.60. And it's really telling me, well, it's only going to move 50 cents. Now, so the next one up would be gamma. This one's important. Gamma measures the rate of change of the delta. Now, not to be too confusing, since delta values are constantly changing with the underlying assets price, gamma is used to measure the rate of change and provide the trader with an idea of what to expect in the future. Now, I'm going to take that future and we're shrinking it down to these options expire today at 4 o'clock Eastern. So these are what we consider zero DTE options, 0 days to expiration. These have become the favorite tool for large trading firms, large asset managers, just larger players in our market to come in and trade because they do not carry what we refer to as early exercise risk. When you're trading just a straight an option that's going to expire and in August, let's say, at the August monthly expiration, then you have early exercise risk. Because under the American style options, they can come in and exercise a call or a put if it's in their favor. So if your position can suddenly get really tossed up, but in zero DTE, there isn't any. So you can buy or sell basically very freely and larger numbers. And they do that. That's exactly what they do. Now, going on with gamma. So while the delta change is based on the underlying asset price, gamma is a constant that represents the rate of change in the delta. So again, gamma is useful for determining the stability of the delta. And now I'm just going to kind of go into, and I want to just continue, but I'm going to come back to gamma because I'm going to talk about what becomes very important when you're trading zero DTE options, and then also what has become very important in terms of volatility trades, because in essence, what's happening today in these zero DTE options is based on the volatility, and that's right here. This is where it becomes extremely interesting. Now, let me just finish what these Greeks are. Theta is basically the rate of decay, and again, being that these options expire today, you're going to see that as this thing moves around, it right now, it's probably trading with some premium, right? It's trading with a dollar. Well, actually, now it's 72 cents. It moves that quickly. So that's just telling you how much premium sits in that option. As we come down here to the at-the-money options, look how much. $12.35 is sitting in this option versus where this is trading. So that becomes very enticing to an options trader, because options trader can sell this to you or to whomever wants to come in. They hedge it by buying the underlying. In this case, it would be the S&P future. So it changes around. So they can hedge their trade and they capture that premium, or they're taking a directional bet. So either they could sell it, and their thought process is they're going to collect this premium if the market stays here, because this premium will drain out of this option quickly as we get closer to that expiration. No matter what, as if it's sitting here, $10 of it is going to come out more. $12 will come out. So we have what we call intrinsic value, and then we have the implied volatility or the implied value. So intrinsic value would be, the index is trading at 45.62. This is a 45.60. So it's worth $2. $2 and, well, less. And you can see how quickly. Now, back to that gamma. Right here, the gamma is showing you that this option really has to move. So if we kind of go, this is kind of interesting because I'm not seeing any really large gamma on either side. So these are very fairly priced, but sometimes you'll see gamma right around the at-the-monies at 0.5, 0.6, 0.7. And that's really kind of being put in place because of the move in the volatility. Now I'm not seeing that, but what is important to remember is that each time you have a trade or you have open interest, and let me go back over to my own, because this is going to be important. So we can look and see right now, not much. Trading is not very heavy today. So during the day, you're going to find where's the largest volume, puts and calls together. And then that's going to determine where the gamma is the largest. And what can happen in a zero DTE option is that today, not so much because we have, you know, the Fed meeting later today, but gamma will move as the stock price moves around. And this is the index. Let me check one other one, which is actually much more in play. Oops. And it doesn't expire today, but they expire on Friday. And let's take a look at Microsoft. These are options that expire on Friday. And we got, right, 338s where the stock is. The most heavily traded option today is the 340s. Also in the puts, but we have a larger puts at the 330 put. Interesting. Very interesting. But the total is going to be here. Now, let me go back over and let's look at that delta gamma. See, a little bit different. Here we have the 340s. You see it's 0.4. So when this thing moves around, and say, for example, you're short and you've got short gamma, so to speak, that if this index or if this stock, excuse me, starts to move up substantially above 340, your delta will increase exponentially, basically. It becomes in the money, and your delta will explode. And the gamma is telling you that it's going to move up quickly. So when this stock rallies, for example, as it did this morning, opened, went up three, dropped back. If it starts to come back up instead of playing at the low, that the gamma is telling us that the delta of that option will increase fairly quickly. So in other words, the value, you'll see the premium get poured back into it. So right now, what's the intrinsic value of this 340 call? Zero. So there's $3.10 of premium. And why? Well, somebody buys this, I'm giving them the right to purchase for me 100 shares of Microsoft for $340. And actually, they're going to pay a lot more. So as the seller, I'm looking to capture that $3.30 of premium. But if I'm just going to carry it, then I got to be careful about this gamma and what it can do to that price of this option. So if this option rallies back to 340, that delta is going to go. And this is telling you the premium. This is telling you the premium is going to collect into here very quickly. This, being $1.02, is telling me it's going to die just as quickly. Theta, decay. What's going to happen to the price? What's going to happen to the price of this option if the market goes down or just sits? It's going to lose dollar's value. The option will lose, not the stock, the option. And you're already seeing how quickly it'll go, right? They do one uptick and they pop this thing 10 cents. So, which is just all a product. Now, the Vega is one that people don't necessarily pay attention to. And I think it's important to do that. So the Vega is interesting because what Vega does, it measures the impact on that option on a change in volatility. Now, this is how I want to segue into the conversation about zero DTE options and our options, which is considered a derivative. Are derivatives the new underlying? And what I'm really saying there is option trading dictating the price of an index or the stock. And so, and that's what I mean by, are derivatives the new underlying? Because before we were pricing the derivative based on the stock. But if the derivative trading is forcing these massive changes via gamma and delta and volatility, right? The other thing to remember, volatility, when you're talking about options, is equated to premium, the amount of premium that's going to be in that price. That's volatility as measured by the VIX. Now, where is it? Right there. By the VIX. So the VIX is how we measure what the volatility is doing. But the volatility in Microsoft is not necessarily dying. It's remaining pretty high because the stock is down 13 or moving up as well. You know, it's trading in a $7 range so far. That's pretty good. So again, now let me talk about volatility. Let's bring it in. Volatility is a product of options. The VIX index, the VIX, was originally, and that's all the way down. I used to have it here. I don't right now. If those of you that have been around long enough, remember the OEX. It was the S&P 100. So back, I'm not sure exactly when, I believe it would have to have been the 80s. There was the Chicago Board of Options Exchange developed the OEX. They took the 100 largest or best stocks out of the S&P from all the different sectors, and they created the OEX. It actually was based, a lot of it was based on technology, the tech boom that occurred. And those options then had a volatility, and that volatility was equated in, number one, volatility would go up if the index or the underlying was going down. Volatility would decrease if the perception was that we're moving into in a bullish fashion and going up. And that rate was then converted into a number. So you're going to hear me talk about that. It's all based on the numbers. It's not based on being bullish or bearish. It's based on the numbers. Now, volatility as a tradable product has gained strength if I can just go back over here, and I'm just going to put in VIX. Look at this. This was the original index. But now we have a trust for the short-term futures. We have a trust for the midterm future. We have a short-term futures ETF. We have a 9-day volatility index, a 1-day, that's the new for the zero DTEs, a 1-day volatility index, a 1-year, et cetera, et cetera. These are all tradable, or they at least have something to say about what's happening on a 1-day basis. So this is the new one, and it doesn't have any options, but see, they watch that. See what they're doing? They're kicking the pants off of it. Now, what happens when they're trading this? They don't trade options, but I believe they trade this. It's an index, no bid or offer, but they can walk into this one and sell because there's a bid and there's an offer. So what are larger firms doing? It's not so hard to try to understand. So I'm going to try to explain that. And the best way that I can do it is there's two basic large volatility trades, and they're grouped together and they're called dispersion trades. The first one side of it is they're selling the index volatility and buying the underlying or the component volatility. So again, if we go back and we're using our SPX as the index, if they're selling the volatility of this index, they're probably doing it right here. So you would think that, well, you know, we have two basic markets that are higher, but the NASDAQ and the S&P are actually lower and the Dow is lower, right? But here we have volatility getting killed. Well, wait a minute, if the markets are moving lower, why is volatility down instead of being up? It has to do with the volatility trade. So what the traders or larger firms are doing is they sell the volatility and they take those proceeds and they buy the underlying volatility. Well, say, for example, you're stepping into Meta and you're buying that volatility. You're stepping into Apple, you're buying that volatility. Or you're even stepping into Microsoft and buying that volatility. Whatever you happen to be doing, we can see that measured in the options. If we're selling the volatility in the index, but then coming back and buying some of the volatility, we may be doing that in the puts. Or we're going over to an individual stock, let's say Apple. Again, these expire on Friday, but they're still going to play that game. It's called the dispersion trade, right? So they sell the volatility. They come over, they take a look at Apple, and the volatility is 26, so it's actually not so bad. If Apple continues to go up, what would we expect the volatility to do? Go down, right? Getting closer to when they were going to report their earnings, we'll see a pop in that volatility. So depending on where you're going to put your money, you'll benefit by buying this volatility. So maybe they'll buy it in the call because they believe that the earnings are going to be good, or they buy it in a put because they think that they're maybe disappoint. No matter what, they're buying this volatility. Now, when we think about the action of what the trade is, if you are selling the index volatility, what normally occurs if the index was going to drop, the volatility will go up. But if the volatility is sinking, if you're selling it, what are you feeling that that index may do? The index will go up, right? Or the underlying, if you're now going over and buying the underlying in the component stocks, then you're feeling that the component stock is going to go up. Component stocks go up, well, so will the index. So you want to be short the volatility in the index. You want to be long the volatility in the underlying. Now, the reverse of that is that they turn around and they buy the volatility and they sell the volatility in the component. So let's look at the actions of what they're doing. If you're buying the volatility in the index, what is that normally associated with? The index is going to go down. Or you're looking at it, so you're buying that volatility and you're selling the volatility in the underlying. What does that reflect? That the underlying is going to go down. So we've got one versus the other. And if the underlying, in this case, Apple, starts hitting the skids, what's going to happen, since it's the heaviest weighted stock in the S&P, in the NASDAQ, and I don't know if it's the heaviest weighted stock, but it's up there in the Dow. What's going to happen to those stocks? They're going to sink. They will go down. Hence, vol in the index will go up. Vol in Apple will go down. So it just, we think about the action and we understand why they're doing it. So again, when we put these traits together, they technically have nothing to do with being bullish or bearish. That's my other point. So why we're getting confused, because many traders, you know, that I deal with and talk to come in and we start talking and they're like, wait a minute, you know, the NASDAQ is down 57. Why? Let me see. I think I have that one. Why is this is the VIX or the volatility index for the NASDAQ? Why is it down? We got the index down on the day. Why is that down? Why isn't it up 9 cents or 10 cents or more? Well, because somewhere along the line, they're selling this volatility via that and purchasing somewhere. Today, it's Apple, it's Google, it's Meta, and Tesla. So once we can get an understanding of how it's being switched around, then and get an understanding that truly the moves that we're witnessing these days don't seem to follow fundamentals, don't seem to follow just the normal ebb and flow. They just kind of go based on volatility. So again, the question becomes, are derivatives the new underlying? So in other words, is it the derivatives that are controlling the price and not vice versa, where price is controlled by the buyers or sellers in the stock? Because remember, each time they do that dispersion trade, both sides of that trade will be hedged. That's how that works. So you're always involved in the underlying, either, you know, and let me go to a better example instead of the SPX, because that index, I mean, you have to go by the S&P futures. But here in the spiders, these all expire today. They also have zero DTE options in the spiders. And these guys, oh, brother, I want to show you. This is a good example. By the end of the day, these 455s, which are basically the at-the-money calls right now, trading almost 56,000, I have seen days, a little bit slow today because we got the Fed meeting this afternoon, but I have seen days where the spiders and these at-the-money are trading 200,000 to 300,000 to 400,000 contracts. That's how big this type of trading has become. And you can always just double check, you know, when you're really looking at this stuff, you can come down to statistics, at least on the TOS platform, but most platforms will give you that. And you just take a look and you just look. Here we have the total volume so far today. That's just today. Over 1 million contracts trading in the spiders. Now, granted, that's divided over a lot of different options, you know, a lot of series we got going on. But still, it's something to watch. And so now I want to go back to zero DTE. We also, and I'm sure maybe some of you that trade the spiders, or you might trade one of the indexes related, like from the S&P, and suddenly you just see it goes ding, 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 or ding, 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 you know, up or down. And you're like, what's going on? No news. I'm not seeing anything. And what happens is there are certain times that we could see a large, you know, through the movement, we can see that the gamma flow or the gamma is likely triggering right around here, right around 455. Well, let's just say that this option drops and starts creating new lows. Maybe it gets down to 452 or 453. And then all of a sudden you see it start to get pushed. This happens because the gamma flow, I can't speak to the spiders, because you have to go on every, because this trades on the penny. So how much gamma goes per dollar or per 10 cents, you'd have to work that out. But if they start scooping up the index, this will go with, of course, right? Proportionately. So if I take it back and I look at the S, let's look at the ES options. Oops, wrong one. That will go directly with the future, which is where they do a lot of this type of activity. So again, those have already expired. Nope, it's the week four. Yeah, Wednesday, today. Okay, so again, we are at 45.86, but let's take a peek to where 45.86 at 45.90, got 1,500. Still, volumes are pretty low right now, but I think because of the Fed. But so the gamma builds. And as this moves in one direction or the other, gamma changes. Gamma can increase dramatically on an index that decides to really make a big move. For example, going from 4606 down to 4583. Again, I'm just going to take a peek. And let's go over here to where I have my charts. That's the opening. And then we started to come down. So the gamma flow to the upside kicked in right there. And then as they bring it down here, it kicks into the downside. When that occurs, it forces those larger traders to adjust, and it could cause them to sell into a decline or buy into a rally. And then when it flips and goes the other direction, they have to readjust again. Now, in a much faster moving market, which we know we've had in the past, more pronounced here in the NASDAQ than it was in the S&P this morning. But the same thing, because guess what? The Qs, which is the representation of the NASDAQ 100, it moved around this morning, had to. So the gamma flow in both directions, it forces traders, firms to make adjustments. And you're like, wow, what's going on? They're not really hitting. Why is this going down? What's happening? And it's nothing more than a function of those zero DTE options and the gamma flow, as we call it. So when you start to trade zero DTE options, because they become very popular, but I'm afraid that so many people are jumping in, particularly on a retail level, because they just want to participate. They see this great movement without truly understanding what can happen to the option that they may hold. So because it works two ways. So again, you come jumping in and you buy one of these options because you're thinking like, oh, look, they're going to push it up. So I think at the end of the day, it's going to end at 45.90. Meanwhile, they take it back down, and your option that you just paid $11.50 for is now suddenly trading at $9 or even lower. If it gets pushed into that direction, these will lose value very quickly, almost one-to-one. That's what that gamma is telling. The higher the gamma, the bigger the move. But because we're kind of slow, but you kind of look at this 45.86, making the 45.85s at the money, only carrying a 51 delta. As it gets closer to expiration, and this volatility actually is pretty low for options that are expiring today because they're not really expecting very much, at least not right now. But I imagine that a lot of this will kick into gear and that gamma will increase. It will increase dramatically if we start moving more fluid. So again, while my example that I'm using today is not really showing the power that gamma can have because we're not moving as strongly, does not mean that it doesn't exist. So again, just to kind of wrap this up, I really do feel that volatility has become the underlying, the derivative, and everything outside of that, all the volatility in the components has become the derivative. So if volatility as a derivative is being used, and we're selling the VIX and taking that and in turn coming back over, and they do it actually in the S&P, and in the individual, you know, like ETFs, like the Qs, the Spiders, the TQs, the SQs, any of those that are based on an index, they carry the same patterns in terms of, you know, those options. I don't know how much they're actually trading, but they don't have the dailies, but they have the weeklies. So again, look at that. They do. Look at that gamma, 14. So you wonder why. You'll see these options change. I mean, the 43s, 42 and a halves, 15, 43s, 15. That's at the money, 43. So you're going to see if this moves away, this option will lose value quickly. And so as an option player, you mean like, oh, I'm going to buy the at the money option. I should be safe, right? Maybe not. Pay attention to what the theta is. Pay attention to what the gamma is. Remember what they're showing you. This is showing you how quickly that'll change. For a one-point move in the underlying or in the index, that your delta in the at the money, right there at the money, your delta will change by 50 cents. So you can go from being nicely long to being nothing, or you know, you're too long and now suddenly you're getting short. Because this is telling you, you're just going to lose your money. The same thing can work in the puts, just depends on what direction you're on and depends over there. So again, when the, and because there's so many products, there's so many ETFs, there's so many indexes, and they're all based on volatility. So again, the question remains, are derivatives the new one? And then so it's been reversed. It's something to just think about. And so, and when you just, if you're going to step in and trade these options, it's a good thing to understand that it doesn't necessarily mean what's happening here and all of the stocks in the queue, in the queues. It has a lot to do with what's happening with volatility. So I'm going to finish that portion, but I want to spend my last, for any of you that follow me or have heard me before, I provide Elliott Wave analysis on a daily basis. I do a daily update on the S&P and the NASDAQ. And so I just kind of want to go over what I'm seeing in my remaining time. First of all, just actually open up the floor. If any of you have any questions, please feel free to ask. I'll be available to answer questions. But in the meantime, I'll take the balance of my time and talk about the index. So let me talk about the S&P, maybe move over to interest rates since they're the ones that are really going to be in play today as we have the Fed decision, and also gold, which, let me see what it's doing today. Where are you? Yeah, it's actually up. That's a good thing. Where's the dollar? Where is the dollar? Where's my dollar index? Right, so somewhere I'm missing. There it is. Dollar index is down. Yeah, that's why they're buying gold. All right, so here in the S&P, I'll start with my biggest picture. If you've not been following me, my biggest picture right now, and I know there's a lot of stuff in here, is that we made an all-time high in the S&P in January of 2022. And from that level, because this particular number here, this big three, Roman numeral three, that rally phase took 90 years. And go back over to the SPX and I'll show you very quickly where that started. Go very quickly out here. Here's the maximum, right? S&P. I have data going back to 1928, all available on my TOS platform. God bless them. So this particular rally, the three started here because there was the two. And that completed in 1932. So basically, that's a 90-year bull market, very long term. There was a world war. There was a couple of crashes. There's the 87 crash, by the way. Here is the great financial collapse of 2009. It's a blurb, right? And there's the pandemic. In the whole scheme of things, it was all part of that long-term bull market. Very interesting when you think about it on that type of a time scale. But now I got to bring it all the way down to where are we on the smaller, on a weekly, right? Same pattern. Here's the top. But now we're going into an equivalent larger correction phase. Now, if you understand anything about Elliott, impulse, which are usually going to be, you know, your bull or your bear market, but the impulse moves are going to be numbers. So they're going to come in as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then we have varying degrees. And as labeled here, this is intermediate, primary, cycle, super cycle. Super cycle is the largest that I'll count up to, but Elliott has one more above that. So again, super cycle, cycle, primary, intermediate. So if we're in a super cycle wave four correction, which by the way insinuates or just implies that we still have a massively large super cycle wave five to put in. That's not going to happen for quite some time, but when it does, it'll be a whole new economic plus. It's an economic expansion is what it'll be. And it's still several years out before it's ready to begin. We got to get through this correction phase first. So if you just look at it technically, don't put any emotion into it and just look at it technically, what is going to be inside of a super cycle wave four? There are going to be three waves of cycle degree labeled A, B, C. Now, being that all of the subsequent degrees operate in the same fashion. So if I start all the way down here at the bottom, what comes in? Well, let's go here. Three waves of cycle degree labeled A, B, C. What's going to be in that cycle wave A? Three waves of primary degree labeled A, B, and C. Okay, I could stop right there. And then what's going to be inside that primary wave A? Three waves of intermediate degree labeled A, B, C. Okay, now we can start. A, B, C. Here comes cycle wave A. Then we have, so we're in, excuse me, a primary wave A. So we're in a primary B wave. What's going to be inside that B wave? Three waves of intermediate degree labeled A, B, and C. Now, if you understand that Eliot told us and specifically wrote that all C waves, no matter where they happen, all C waves are five waves, five wave affair. So here we are in this primary B wave, which is going to be an ABC, and we're inside that. We're inside the intermediate C wave, which is going to be five waves of minor degree, which are labeled, and I'll go down to my daily so we can see inside. They're labeled. There's the C wave here. There's primary one, two, three, and four. So we're inside the final, the fifth wave of minor degree to complete the intermediate wave C, which will complete the primary wave B. It's pretty heavy duty. We've been following this primary B wave began at the October lows of 2022. So we're 9 months into this, and we're finally now kind of reaching, which is looking to be the pinnacle. Now, what I can add to all this picture is David will put that in for you. So hold on just a second. He'll stick that in. Thank you. And if you want to see this, go to TradersHelpingTraders.com, and it'll pull you right into where you can find these updates. So it's going to be a fifth wave up. Now, within that fifth wave, within the minor fifth wave, we're going to have five waves of minute degree. So that's how small I'm going to get. So on the daily, but then I'm going to bring this down to, let's say, the four-hour chart. Now, I know I've got this labeled a little bit somewhere. Thought I did anyway. I guess I don't. Oh, it's the SPX. My bad. Let me go over here and go back out to my four-hour chart. So now we're inside this minor wave five, one, two, three, and a four. Wow. Okay. So really, if I bring it down to my hourly chart, where are we? We're in minute wave five, of minor wave five, of intermediate wave C, of primary wave B. We're at that finishing move. And boy, is it kind of just putting itself together. Like, what do you want to do here? So I can break this down to an hourly chart and come up with a reasonable path of what could happen today. And because the SPX, the cash index, did move to a new high over the July 19th high that we had here in the futures market, but the future did not. Came close, but no fireworks. Didn't happen. That leaves open the possibility that for this wave four to complete, it may come all the way back down to there. And it's what we call an ABC flat. That's a possibility. We've got a lot going on today. We have Meta reporting this afternoon. We have the Fed coming out well before that. So we got a lot going on. We could go here and then go here. So then now what I add to my analysis is Fibonacci. The Fibonacci number sequences are glorious because actually they are the law of nature if you really want to understand them. Our bodies are constructed in Fibonacci relationships. They really are. Isn't the wave count always 1 or A or 2 or B to begin with? No. Yes, but it depends on where you are. So yes, you're right on that statement, but if you're going to go all the way back out to there, it does. In terms of the move itself, it did. This third wave began way before I had the data. So again, that's 1987. That's the great financial collapse. And most of you guys were trading at this, I would imagine. That's the pandemic. So it's also, you know, just to kind of add to this picture, it's trying to understand, why did we rally so strongly? Why did everybody turn so bullish? Were we so bullish on the economy after being slaughtered here? Were we so bullish on the economy after we saw this get devastation? Well, yes, we were. Because why? Because the Federal Reserve and the Treasury opened the floodgates called stimulus. Here, it was stimulus to corporations. Here, it was the zero interest rate policy that really carried us all the way to that high. So I'm going to wrap this up because I got a minute. And I want to leave time. I'm going to do this correctly because normally when I do my presentations, I tend to run way over. And so I'm going to help out David today and not have him have to come in. So, and again, we are finishing a 9-month counter trend rally. So what really comes next, and this again, I'm not bullish or bearish. I'm analyzing what the market is telling me, what Eliot is telling me. Eliot doesn't know anything about bulls or bears. Eliot does recognize human emotional responses that are very charitable, by the way. And that's what I'm counting, the human emotion here. And all I got to do is let's take you back. Here's the June highs. We came down, and what really kicked off this? NVIDIA coming out with these earnings, having a CEO that said, we are going to break the doors down. We're going to bust this thing. We're going to the moon. We're the best thing since sliced bread. We're going to surpass all our competition in our earnings. Wow, that was quite the statement, and everybody believed them. Because they do have a chip that everybody wants. Well, if you got it, nobody else does, make your call. Well, what happened? The stock went up 100 on that day, right? When they reported those earnings in that statement, it went up 100 and it hasn't stopped. It has not stopped. And it's not really that far from its high, which is $480, because we're continuing to get positive statements from everybody. So what's that doing to the index? Propelling it to move higher, right? Well, quote unquote, is that a human emotional response? Yes. Does it have anything to really do with what the capabilities of these companies really are? No. It's my emotion against your emotion. So we're looking at Meta. Meta's now down, but it's actually from the high, it's down $7. Well, what's really going on there? What's happening here, right? If Google blew the doors off with their ad revenue, right? So that's from YouTube and also from, you know, the websites. They did very successfully with their ad revenue. Now they're believing Meta's got to. Is that reality or is that human emotion? Is selling it reality or just a product of volatility? So is it being bullish or is it being bearish or is it the number? Things to consider. I want to thank you for allowing me, David, I want to thank you for allowing me to kick off today. This is the first because normally I come in later in the day, but it was really a pleasure to come in first off and to kick this off. I hope I'm leaving you with some thoughts, something to think about, a little bit maybe of a better understanding of zero DTE options and gamma flows and what each of those Greeks mean and how they affect us day to day. A little bit better understanding is like, what's leading what? Are the options leading the underlying or is it still the underlying leading the option? It's a good question and it's a great conversation. I am available and I always will answer questions. So please, you can reach me at, thank you very much. You can reach me at, and David, if you wouldn't mind just sticking my email address up there. So it's michael@mjf1partners.com. Send me an email, ask me your questions, leave a comment if you choose. I'm very happy to answer questions and go from there. Again, thank you so much, David. Thank you, Anka. I love doing these. And thank you, everyone, for joining me today and listening.